Welcome to the Noontime Public Affairs program here at KFM 88.1 Grand Junction, Colorado. And you can listen to this show on the web. You can listen to the entire radio station on the web at kfmradio.org. We are here for the next hour to be able to answer your questions about anything tech-related. My name is Rick Castellini, and alongside me trying to find the air conditioner button is Adam Cochran.
That's an annoying noise, rattling
right there. That's kind of a nice sound to be in a radio booth, huh?
Yeah, I think we got it going now.
But that's Adam. Our website is helpmerick.com.
And you know, our area, Western
Slope, growing?
Is growing quite a bit. I've been surprised. Over the last year and a year and a half, it's really improved over what it used to be.
Have they taken all the sex ads off now?
I don't know. Maybe. I think they've locked them down from what
pretty
I understood.
Pretty tight.
Their policy.
Our phone number, 970-241-8801, extension
1.
1.
Yes.
And you can call that number and you can give us a call and we will answer your tech questions, or you can Twitter us at HelpMeRick or at Talking Digital, and we'll get those Twitters and answer those questions.
Yeah, we've got somebody on the line who's probably been waiting all week to call us with a question. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. How are
Good.
You?
Good. Who's this?
My name is Jeff Basinger.
Hi, what can we do for you?
Well, I just wanted to let you know that you gave an incorrect telephone number when you gave the phone number for Western Equality.
Oh, what number is it?
The correct phone number for Western Equality is 242-8969, I believe.
Holy mackerel, then we've been giving it wrong for months.
Yeah, that's the actual telephone number you gave. 243-2437 is the Western Colorado AIDS Project.
Okay, so give me that number again. 242?
I believe it's 242-8969, but please confirm that either from the website or the phone book.
Well, and hopefully they'll call us. They haven't called in over a year and a half, but we appreciate you being a good citizen and calling.
Well, I just happened to be driving through Grand Junction listening to KAFM, my favorite radio station, and thought I'd let you know. So you give out good information.
Terrific.
Well, if you have a tech question, do you have a tech question before we let you off the phone here?
Unfortunately, I don't.
Come on, we know you do.
What kind of phone are you calling us on?
A BlackBerry.
Oh, there's a tech. That's a great piece of tech right there.
Which BlackBerry?
A Curve.
Oh, that's a good one. Curve. That's my favorite BlackBerry.
I like it, except my fingers are a little too pudgy for the little buttons.
I understand. Yep, it is a tight keyboard, but it's a good phone. It's my second favorite to the iPhone, I think, right now.
Oh, interesting. Well, actually, I do have a question then, is how can I dumb it down to my intelligence level?
Do you mean the BlackBerry?
Yeah.
I think any kind of technology, when you're starting out, is always start with the things that are going to be most useful to you and then branch out. So, for example, maybe on a BlackBerry, one of the biggest things primarily is email. So I'm hoping you're doing email on it.
Yes.
Okay, good. And you're doing pretty well with email.
Yeah, and I'm actually doing text messaging finally,
good.
Too.
There you go. Okay, how about calendar? Do you use the calendar on it?
I do, and I sync it with my Outlook at my office.
Well, so see, you're doing pretty good in with it. I would say that you don't need a lot of help. You're moving right along with the features of the BlackBerry.
How about a picture? Have you sent a picture with it?
Yes, I have.
Well, very good. You are using it for exactly what it's intended for. So,
oh,
I think the next step for you, if you want to get a little bit of excitement there, is go out there and try to find an application to put on it. Maybe a Twitter application or a Facebook if you use Facebook, or just a news reading application, something out there that just kind of is useful. It's an add-on to the BlackBerry. There's a lot of tools. It's even something simple like a calendar or a calculator or maybe a tip calculator, something like that, just adds a little bit more functionality to it. Yeah, stopwatch.
Yeah.
Those are always
I do use the calculator.
Good.
Excellent. Well, terrific.
Yeah.
Sounds
and
like
actually,
you called us with a tech question anyway.
And I got JavaScript downloaded on it yesterday, so now I can truly surf the web on it.
Good. Very cool. Well, you're all set then.
Well, I don't feel so unintelligent now.
No,
thanks,
that's
guys.
The point. That's what we're all about. We're always trying to help people realize they don't need to be techie to enjoy and get some usefulness out of tech. You just have to use it as a tool, and you're doing it right.
Super. All
okay.
right. Have a great day.
Well,
and
thank you for calling.
Please confirm that phone number for Western Equality.
We
all
got
right.
it. Thank
Appreciate
you.
It.
Thanks. Bye.
241-8801, extension 1. I was hoping somebody found the dog.
Oh, yeah, me too. That would be cool.
241-8801, extension 1. 970 is the area code. 970-241-8801. Or you can tweet Adam at Talking Digital or me at Help Me Rick, and we'll get those tweets and we'll answer those questions on the air as well. We had Grand Junction's first tweet up today. It was a huge success.
Yeah.
Half of the organizers showed up, and then we had one extra person.
Very cool.
So that was pretty good.
Wow, you had a great showing.
So we have 50% of the organizers and one extra person. But the organization, it was an experiment. It was
You know, as far as our organizers go, even then, we had a few unofficial organizers who helped kind of spread the word a little bit too.
Yeah,
so we had a lot of
People afterwards said they would come, but they just had it was not the right time. So maybe we'll try an evening one next time or
absolutely
something else and give it a shot. But I have to say that the Twitter thing is it's a crazy deal, and I can see why they say, what is it, 70% of people stop using it after a month?
Oh, absolutely.
Because it's definitely not for everybody.
Nope.
Definitely not for everyone. But it is if it works for you, it works well.
Yeah. I think. Absolutely. Absolutely.
But anyway, so our topic of the day, we did not discuss this beforehand.
That's okay. I am ready.
But I think our topic of the day, it's May.
Yep.
What happens? What's the biggest thing that happens in May as far as events go?
Cinco de Mayo.
Okay.
I'm just kidding.
Second biggest.
I'm just kidding. It's a Mother's Day.
Okay. Third biggest.
Oh, my gosh. Spring? I don't know.
No, that's March.
That's actually March. Yeah. I have no idea.
Graduation.
Oh, graduation.
Graduation.
You know, graduation and Mother's Day, to me, are kind of the same topic.
Really,
because you buy gifts, you show people you appreciate them, you congratulate them, you do all that stuff. It's all kind of the same.
But do you cook breakfast in bed for the graduate?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, why not?
That's true. All right. Well,
you celebrate it the same way.
We'll consider them kind of a co-holiday.
Except you don't sit in the sun for quite as long.
Okay, there you go.
There you go.
But graduation happens this time of the year, obviously. May and June, depending on the part of country you're in, it could be June. But this is graduation season, and one of the biggest questions we get around this time of the year is, what laptop do you recommend or computer do you recommend for my upcoming graduate?
Right.
And the last, I've got to say, 4 to 5 years, my answer has been the same. And my answer is a Macintosh.
Yeah.
Get an Apple notebook for your graduate. It's going to seem a little pricey at first, but what you're going to save money in is time and repair work down the line, because invariably within the first semester, or for sure the first year of that freshman college student's experience, something's going to go wrong on a PC, on a Windows computer, with viruses or spyware or some crazy thing, and they're going to end up taking it to the campus computer people or have to take it off site to a computer place, and they're going to be down and out for a week or two or more, or down and out for a lot of money.
Yeah, exactly. If they get it fixed for free, it probably won't be fixed right.
Right. It won't stay fixed very long.
Exactly. If they get it fixed right, then it's probably going to cost them a lot of money. So it's there's a trade-off there.
And there are exceptions. If your graduate happens to be a very, very good computer person and is very up on security and keeping their computer clean, they'll probably do okay with a PC. But that's not the average.
I think
graduate.
90% of the people who think they fit that category don't fit that category too.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
So I would say spend a little extra money on a MacBook. The little laptops. They don't need the 15-inch. They don't need the 17-inch. So you only have to spend $1,000 to $1,200.
Yeah.
You can even look for the refurbished ones that are even a little bit less than that.
Yeah, $700 to $800 for a refurbished. Yeah.
And it should last them their whole college career very easily, and probably have very little or zero problems.
Right.
You agree?
I agree. And one thing that, you know, there's several ways of looking at it. When a graduate is looking at getting a laptop for college, a lot of times they say, well, I want to major in architecture. I want to major in graphic design or something. So I need one that will run Photoshop. I need one that will do CAD design, whatever. Mm-hmm. And while that is true, you will need one that does those things. You really need to keep in mind, unless you're going to a technical school, the first three quarters of the time or half time you're going to be in college, you're not even going to touch those programs, the CAD design programs and all of that. You're going to be studying history, and you're going to be taking care of your general psych classes. You're going to be taking the general classes that have nothing to do with the thing you're going to school for. You're going to be getting about 30 hours or whatever of generals out of the way first. By the time you actually get into those CAD classes, the computer required to run those CAD programs may be twice as fast as what you bought going into college. So I always recommend to people to first go with an inexpensive laptop, go with an inexpensive computer.
For those kinds of degrees.
Yeah, even a low-end, you know, the MacBook for $899 or $999. You know, go with a MacBook and just realize that you're probably going to be selling that 2 years into college to some other student who's coming in, sell it for $400 or $500 to a new student, and then you're going to be buying a bigger, better laptop, probably one that runs Windows Vista if you're running a CAD design thing, probably a MacBook Pro or a Mac Mini if you're planning on moving up to graphic design or something like that. But don't buy the computer that you expect to take you all through the full 6 years of college right off the bat.
And I was just thinking, as you're talking about this, the flip side of a Mac, if you do go into a particular major where you're going to need a PC program,
right,
is you can buy a copy of Windows and put it on the Macintosh.
Absolutely.
And because in most cases, the Macintosh hardware runs Windows Windows better than a traditional Windows.
Yeah, yeah. There's two ways of running Windows on a Macintosh. There's one where you run it in kind of a virtual machine where it actually is Windows running inside of Macintosh. So basically it runs like a program on the computer. Right. The other way is a little quicker.
That's called Parallels.
It's called Parallels, or I think there's a couple other ones that do it too.
Yeah, you can get Virtual Machine. And
There's several of them. So it's either running it as a program on there, which tends to run Windows a little bit slower, but it's nice because you don't have to turn off the computer or anything. If you want to run it the quickest way possible, then what you have to do is do a thing called dual booting, or boot camp is what it's called on the Mac. Mm-hmm. And that's where you actually have to turn off the computer and then turn it back on using Windows. And you can't run both sides simultaneously, but it runs both sides very, very quickly. So now there's kind of a trade-off there.
If you happen to have one of those kids we were talking about that is a very geeky type of kid that really enjoys computers and is good at computers, and you don't want to spend $1,000 for a computer, my second option for folks, and I've done this for probably three or four, and they've done real well, is you get a very inexpensive PC laptop, like a HP or a Acer.
The Acers are fantastic. Yeah.
You can get them for like $400.
Yeah.
$400 to $500. And then I take Windows off of it, and I put Linux on it.
Uh-huh.
And if you put a good version of Linux, it's also just as safe as a Mac. And if they're just doing their word processing and their email and all that good stuff, they are going to be just fine with that.
And you could dual boot that as well if you wanted to where it has Linux and Windows. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so there's a lot of options out there. I guess what we're saying is don't just go out there and buy a Windows machine.
And don't buy the cheapest one.
And hand it to them, because you will be doing a lot more work on it, and it's going to have problems.
And speaking of Windows and buying a new Windows machine, and I've been talking about this for about the last 3 or 4 months. Uh-huh. If you're in the market, this isn't necessarily for graduates, but for anyone.
Uh-huh.
If you're in the market for a new Windows machine, I would hold off until late fall, early winter, because the next version of Windows is coming out by then. And of course, the hardware gets a little stronger between now and then too. And Windows 7 is slated. They haven't given us a firm date, but they're telling us that it will be out by the holidays.
It's actually going to be, according to Acer, they're going to start, the date right now, I think, was October 7th is when they're going to start putting it in OEM machines, which means the brand new computer's on the shelf.
Now, will that mean it's on the shelf ready to buy?
Not ready to buy yet, but they said it wouldn't be till a month after that or something like that it actually starts appearing. But again,
Microsoft
changes their dates. You can't ever depend on it, because Microsoft will roll things back and change things all the time.
Right.
It's inevitable. It's like their support for Windows XP. They're saying it's going to expire in 2010. I'll be surprised if it actually runs out before 2014 with the way that they roll things. So
I would too, because so many businesses are even just now getting to it.
Yeah.
I was hoping they would bring Windows 7 out in time for the July-August education rush, you know, for people going to school, back to school. But
at the same time, the other way I look at that too is I never want to be the first generation adopter of a new operating system. And so getting Windows 7 on the day it comes out, I would rather have Windows Vista with all of its clunkiness. I'd rather have Windows Vista for an additional year and know that Windows 7 has all the bugs fixed and is compatible and everything. I know it's pretty good, but
I would say I'm going to differ on this time. I agree with you normally
you've been playing with Windows 7.
Well, even though they've done all the beta and stuff, it's really not known what's going to happen until it gets out into the public, because then everybody really hammers on it, because usually the people that are beta testing are geeky people.
Right.
And so they can get around.
Exactly.
So I agree with you on that point. But I do think, from what I've seen the last 4 months using it, Windows 7 already, even in its beta form, is heads and tails above Vista.
Good.
It really, really is.
Cool.
And supposedly it's going to be more compatible with hardware and software than Vista was initially.
Now,
who knows? But I have to say that they've really made it kind of Linux-like in terms of the install and in terms of installing new hardware drivers. Mm-hmm. That's been traditionally a very hard thing to do for the average computer user, is add a new video card or
right.
or add a printer or something like that, or a webcam. And I'll tell you, even on the two different installs I've done, it has seen everything up front right from the install. I haven't had to go to a third-party driver at all.
Is that because it uses more of a generic driver back in the old Windows 98 days where it maybe uses a more standardized driver for doing things?
I'm just happy to see it. I'm glad it works.
Absolutely. That's always one of the biggest headaches.
All right, you're listening to Rick and Adam on the Noontime Public Affairs here on 88.1 Grand Junction, Colorado. 88.1 FM, I should say, Grand Junction, Colorado. And you can give us a call at 970-241-8801, extension 1, with your questions about anything tech-related. And if you've been using Windows 7 and beta testing, call us up and tell us what you've thought of it. Or if you have a graduate that's going to school and you're thinking about a laptop and you need more details, call us up. Any kind of tech questions, give us a call. Or if you're using Twitter, you can Twitter us at HelpMeRick or at TalkingDigital.
Yep.
And we'll check it out. Did you check your Twitter?
It buzzes when I get it. So,
because you have yours coming to your phone.
I have mine. Anything that's at me comes to my phone and buzzes me. Yep.
For some reason, yours got turned on yesterday from my mobile alerts.
Great.
And last night I kept getting bzz, 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 and you, because you were doing your twit pics from, you must have been at a...
Oh, I was at a band concert. Yeah. I was just putting some twit pics up.
I got one that said somebody's ear, somebody's wife. And I said, why am I just... And then I noticed it was just yours.
Yeah. You just have mine. Yeah, I have yours turned on, and I have Annie Payne's turned on, and a few of them that I get straight to my phone. But any of them that are at me directly... It's interesting, and I don't know how interesting this is to other people. I hope it is. But Twitter changed their at reply system this week. Did you see that?
Right.
To where if you type in at so-and-so, then everybody can see it. But if you're on the Twitter website and you reply to something somebody says, even though it looks the same, not everybody sees those at replies.
Only from the website.
Only from the website.
But if you're using TweetDeck or
using
a phone
deck
or whatever,
or anything else, and do it, it still shows up for everybody.
Interesting.
Very weird. Yeah, it's very weird. Or Twirl or any of those. Yeah.
I did tweet about that and said I wish people would get as excited about more important things.
Yeah.
As they did about that.
Right.
Because in the tech world, if
it's
you
really
change
weird,
one little
it?
Thing, people get just
it
fired
is really
up.
Weird,
they get
yeah.
fired up. All right, 241-8801, extension 1. But speaking again of Windows 7, I did download the newest version, which is called Release Candidate 1. And in the computer world, you usually have alpha versions, which are your really early testing versions of a product.
For the brave, brave souls who can't help but wait.
Or they're the ones working on it, right.
Yeah.
And then they have beta. Beta usually means that things are pretty well under wraps and they're getting close to a final product, but they're still testing it. And then when they bring out an RC or a release candidate, the release candidate is something that's very, very close to what's going to be the final product. Not always exactly, but it's very close. And that's what Microsoft released just about 2 weeks ago. And tons of people have downloaded. I mean, it's been in the millions for sure, all around the world in the different languages. And overall, the talk about it on the web has been pretty positive. I have seen a few people who've said that it's been slow.
Mm-hmm.
But when I've tried to reply to them to see what kind of machine they're running it on, I haven't heard back.
Right.
But I can tell you I'm using the Windows 7 on a 2-year-old machine and on a machine that's just about a year and a half old, and it's running pretty well on both of those. But it'll be interesting to see. But I'm curious if anybody else out there listening is using Windows 7. And you can call us up and tell us about it at 241-8801 extension 1. We'll be glad to answer those questions. Trying to think what else happened in news this month.
Oh, there's all kinds of stuff.
What else do you have? What poked out in your eye?
Well,
I know one thing that came out yesterday.
Our Pre?
Yes.
Yeah.
Talk about it.
Pre is officially coming out on June 6th.
What is the Pre?
The Pre is the new smartphone from Palm.
Okay.
Made to compete more with the BlackBerry, but kind of with the iPhone as well. It's kind of a convergence of the two. It's exciting because it's a phone that has the advantages of a touch screen, which every, you know, you have your touch screen camp, people who like pushing the screens, but then you have your also your tactile buttons camp of people who like actually having a keyboard. And the Pre is a design that's made to implement both of those. The keyboard kind of slides out.
Now, there's no on-screen keyboard on it, though, right? It's the only keyboard.
Not yet, but it's open. It's open source, mm-hmm. so for the most part, it's an open architecture, so people can create a keyboard if they want
I don't
to.
I don't know why you'd want it both.
But I don't know either. Some people are saying that the buttons are a little bit spongy. They're kind of
feel
a little bit
some
different.
Feedback
yeah,
already?
They're saying that they're more like the buttons on the Centro, which is kind of a. There's no.
It's a membrane kind of a
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, it's like a. It's they're recessed or sorry they're raised buttons so you can feel them, but they're actually more like touchpads kind of.
Right.
Kind of hard to explain, but I think it's fairly easy to type on, and the software that Palm has always used works really well. So if you mash a couple buttons at the same time, it usually picks up the one that receives the most pressure.
And the Pre is going to be just a hair wider than the Centro.
Yeah.
So the key
hair
should
wider
be...
but shorter.
But the key should be a little bit bigger, right?
Yeah, I don't know. We're waiting to see because it is kind of in a... The problem is the keyboard is kind of lowered. You can go and see it at palm.com and see what it looks like.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen the new videos they've done? There's
yeah,
two new videos.
I've been watching
They're
their
kind
videos.
Of funny, isn't it?
Yeah. I still don't think they get it with their videos. I still think you're still not showing the power. You're showing a business person's life or something
right.
like that. They need to show more what it'll be like in day-to-day life.
Right.
But the neat things about the Pre, I mean, part of it is the design. It is kind of a cool. It's made to push with your fingers and stuff like that. But the thing that the Pre has done is it is going to move everything to the web. So there's not going to be...
You don't have to synchronize
You don't
anything.
Need to put as many programs on it. You don't need to synchronize it. All of your contacts, everything will be stored on the web.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is like in your address book, it will merge together Facebook and your chat and everything. So in other words, if you like to use AOL Instant Messenger and Facebook, you can go into a person's contact file and it will show you whether they're online.
On
it'll show
service?
You their Facebook contacts and shows you all that stuff under their contact information. So it's the first device to really merge all the different ways that people are keeping in touch, Twitter and Facebook and all of that, just being able to show it all in one place instead of having to jump back and forth. The other nice thing about the Pre that kind of gives it some promise is that it runs background software. So in other words, you can have multiple programs open at one time. You can have a chat program opened all the time if you want to, an instant messaging program. You can have that opened all the time mm-hmm. and just on a standby mode so that you don't, right now with the Palm and with the iPhone and all of those, you aren't allowed to run two programs at the same time. Windows Mobile is the only platform that supports it. So it'll be kind of interesting to see what the Pre does. I don't know that the Pre
Windows
will be.
Mobile.
Yeah, I don't know if the Pre will be the be all and end all. I don't think it will be. I think it's going to be a step in the right
now,
direction.
Who's releasing the Pre? What service?
Just Sprint for right now.
Okay.
However, there's another version of it that kind of is a lot like a Pre version of the Centro. Has a keyboard right on the front of it. That will be released through, I believe it's AT&T.
Also, but it's not
in a few
the Pre?
Months. No, it's not the Pre. It's the one that was codenamed Pixie or something like that. And it doesn't look like the Pre. It doesn't slide. It has a keyboard. It's a lot like the Centro.
Same basic, operating system, though?
Yep, same operating system, same touch screen, everything. It's just a smaller screen on it.
Mm-hmm.
Same basic design as the Trio Pro or the Centro is using.
Now, like the iPhone, if you buy the Palm Pre from Sprint,
right.
you have to get... Their unlimited plan, correct?
Right.
Their data plan?
They have an unlimited data plan. You have
right.
to get that, but you can vary on the number of talk minutes
right.
you have.
Okay.
But the Sprint, I think the Trio unlimited data plan, or sorry, the Trio, the Pre unlimited data plan ends up to be about $89 a month, which isn't bad.
You mean with?
With, I think it's with 900 minutes and unlimited data is about $89 a month. But that's also unlimited texting, unlimited. It's unlimited everything.
So it sounds
basically.
Like the pricing will be a little closer to the iPhone pricing,
A little bit, but it's still cheaper. Still far cheaper than the iPhone pricing on the month-to-month. It's about $30 a month cheaper for what you get. Because you don't have to pay for the extra texting.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to pay for, it's just an all-inclusive thing.
Right. So it'll be interesting. So it'll be interesting to see how well it's received.
Yeah.
Because it's been so long since Palm's come out with a new machine that's
right.
been... That's been a compelling machine.
It's been interesting, yeah, because Palm has always been, they haven't come out with anything new as far as the way things work for 5 years or
at
so.
At least,
so,
right.
So this is really Palm changing everything.
Right.
They're basically running
this
it
This is going to make or break them, I think.
It really is. It really is.
And it
Everybody's
seems like
that.
A great little product.
Yeah.
It really does. And I finally jumped off the Palm wagon train about a little over, less than a year ago, last August, because I just, there was too many other good things happening on the other platforms.
Yeah.
The other one that's starting to make more of a splash too, talking about phones today, is the Google Android.
Yeah.
And the Google Android is a is another kind of almost a Palm Pre-ish type operating system based on Linux that is open source, so it can go to many different phones.
Right.
And I guess there's two or three more of those phones slated for release pretty quick.
Yeah, and I think that we can expect good things from it. I think when it all comes down to it, it's going to be a big battle between Android and iPhone as far as the geeks go, the people who want to run lots of applications and do a lot of things with their phones. And that's why the Palm Pre, they say that they're targeting it at the fat middle of the market, which is the BlackBerry audience, the people who don't necessarily add a lot of applications and use their phone as a big as new tools all the time, but they use it for keeping in touch with everybody and for basic applications, like we talked about, different calculators and things like that. So it'll be interesting to see what happens and how much of a dent the Pre makes in the market. But at the same time, BlackBerry is amazing. I mean, I really, like I said, if I was moving away from my phone right now,
I've played with the Storm. I've played with the Curve. I've played with the Bold. I don't like any of them.
Yeah.
To me, the fonts are ugly.
Yeah.
The interface is not intuitive to me.
Right.
Being, again, coming from the Palm world.
Sure.
The applications are clunky. And the only thing I think that the BlackBerry has going from my standpoint is the email. But that's where it started. The email was its best.
That's what it was. It was an email device.
That's what it was. An email only device. And I just don't see that the development is going over to BlackBerry for, again, and I'm one of the geeky type people that like to add the applications and things like that. But, and the funny thing is the new BlackBerry, which one's the one with the touchscreen?
That's the Storm.
Yeah. I've had three or four people,
yeah.
a couple of friends and a couple of clients, tried using it for a month
and
got rid of it.
Yeah.
They didn't like it.
I don't really count the Storm as being in with the BlackBerry crowd. I mean, I think of a BlackBerry, I think of a wide device with a full touch keyboard that basically is made for email and cell phone.
Now, John here at KFM loves his Storm.
Yeah.
And he's gotten along with it well, and he's been massaged it into his Mac and likes it pretty well. But he's been the only person that I know, personally know, that's had the Storm and liked it.
Yeah, the Storm has its fans, but I kind of separate it aside from it. And the people I know who really get the most out of the BlackBerry are the people who wouldn't know what to do and wouldn't want to pay for the iPhone because they wouldn't use it for that much.
Right.
And so I think there is a market there for people who want to do email and want to do text messaging and want to do cell phone and maybe even want to do calendar.
I think
but have no use for anything else.
I think it's a good gateway device.
Yeah.
Because they're pretty inexpensive.
Right.
And it's a good gateway device for people learning to get some of their information they used to go on their PC for.
Right.
On their phone.
Yeah.
You know, calendaring, more elaborate contact management.
Sure.
Instead of just having a name and a phone number.
Yeah.
Have a name, a phone number, an address, an email address, you know, the other things on
And that's what I see as exciting about the Pre, is that it's going to get people excited about it who normally use a BlackBerry and, you know, want to use the extra features of their phone, but they're not the iPhone people. The iPhone people are a whole different, I mean, the iPhone is a computer. It's a computer with a phone and a
Do you think
web
the price is going to hinder the Palm Pre?
I don't know. I think so. I think a little bit.
Because it's $300 out of pocket, and then you got to send in a rebate.
Right.
For $100. So it's, the price overall is a great price for a smartphone.
Right.
But I'm wondering what's going to happen.
I think people will see it and really want it. But I don't think the people who will just come in, you know, I think somebody will come in looking for a high-end BlackBerry or a Storm or something like that.
Do you think people will jump carriers like people did to the iPhone, jump to AT&T because of the device?
I think you'll get people who jump from Verizon to Sprint, but I think anybody who's on AT&T already has an iPhone.
And won't jump over.
And isn't going to jump over because it's the same price as the iPhone, basically. So
for the hardware,
I don't think you're going to get anybody jumping from AT&T. But people want people who are on Verizon, who have no hope of getting who don't want to jump to a GSM service like AT&T because of the coverage or the slow data or whatever.
Right.
And so they're going to just stay. You know, Sprint's network basically is Verizon's network in most areas because they share a lot of the same stuff. So I think you'll get a lot of Verizon people.
It'll be interesting, too, to see, because Sprint is also another company that's been a little bit on a backslide.
Yeah.
So this is a big gamble for them and for Palm.
Exactly. Sprint and Palm are in the same boat. They're really kind of, this is their last effort, and we'll see what happens. I mean, Palm may get bought by somebody, and Sprint may get bought by somebody. Yeah, WiMAX actually looks like it's going to happen.
Someday.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're rolling it out. And so, you know, it's hard to tell.
Yeah, at least it's not vaporware like it used to be.
Yeah.
All right, our phone number is 241-8801. If you're a staunch BlackBerry user and you love it, call me up and tell me why you love it, because I just don't see the draw except for the price of the BlackBerry. If you love your iPhone, call us up, tell us about that. Or if you're wondering why do people need these kind of devices and what could it do for you, call us up, 241-8801 extension 1. And we're just jabbering here like we always do about things that come up regarding the latest and greatest in tech that we think is a little bit applicable to most people out there. But if we're completely off base, give us a call. That's a public affairs program. It's your program. Give us a call and guide us in which direction you want to go. Maybe you just want to learn how to attach a file to an email. We'll do that for you. We'll help you do that.
Absolutely.
People kind of laugh at me on Twitter. I constantly am saying, and I haven't done it for about a week, to teach someone how to copy and paste. And I know that you're listening right now, and I know you have no clue how to copy and paste. Mm-hmm. And that's nothing to be embarrassed about, but yet it's a very important skill to learn, and we can tell you how to do that over the phone.
I about posted this morning that I taught someone to copy and paste for the fifth time today.
Did you?
The same person. The same person. I explained to one person for the fifth time how to copy and paste today.
Oh, you got to give him the video. Show him the video.
That's what I'll have to do. It doesn't work. All right. Not for you, but for this particular client. Hello, you're on KFM Public Affairs. How are you doing?
Okay. How are you guys doing?
Good. Who's this?
This is John Jenkins.
Hi, John.
Hey, I got a question. It's a tech question. It doesn't have anything to do with computers per se, but I would like a good telephone answering machine. One that you don't have to unplug and plug back in every few weeks because it goes haywire.
Sounds like you just have a defective answering machine.
Who's your phone service? Who do you use for phone service? Quest?
Yeah.
I think that the best way to go, and I've thought this for years, to me, an answering machine is way early 20th century. I think if anybody's using an answering machine, you're out of touch. I think you need to go and pay just an extra couple of bucks a month and get the voicemail from your phone company, in your case, Quest. Because voicemail allows you to pick up your messages anywhere, and then you're not having to worry about batteries and unplugging and tapes and all that kind of stuff, or figuring out how to erase the previous messages. You can always get your messages from anywhere just by calling your phone number, and your phone's never busy. I hate call waiting. Call waiting is the bane of our society. But I also hate busy signals. So that leaves me in a quandary.
Yeah.
But if you have voicemail and you're on the phone, you don't have to pay the extra money and irritate your callers with call waiting, because if you're on the phone, it automatically gets shunted off to the voicemail. And when you get off the phone, you just listen to the dial tone. And if it says there's just a little difference in the dial tone, and you'll know you have a message, and you pick it up and listen to it.
Hey, that sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
The phone we have, it's a VTech, and I mean, it's hard to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, well, right now I'm talking to you on our 85 orange banana phone, AT&T banana phone, and it's still got the best sound.
Those old phones will last forever, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but I would go with the voicemail route. I think that's the best way to go.
Yeah.
You just need, the one thing about voicemail is you want to keep checking it. We have voicemail when we switch from an answering machine, and sometimes we'll go 2 or 3 days without even thinking about checking it, because there's no little red flashing light telling you have messages. You have to actually go to the phone and check them.
Right, right. Well, the reason we have an answering machine is for the business, our business, and you know, so I could just add that to the daily routine of checking.
Well, and if it's a business, I think that's all the more reason to get a voicemail, because it's a much more professional sounding for your customers. They'll never get a busy signal. You know, there's just too many positives.
Yeah. Okay, guys.
All right. Appreciate the call.
Yep. Thanks a million.
Have a good day.
Bye.
241-8801 extension 1. See, we'll answer questions about anything. And even if we don't know the answer, we'll make something up and make you feel good about the answer. So give us a call, 241-8801 extension 1. I got a tweet here, but it was from Adam. Good luck,
Adam. It was?
Yeah. On the at Help Me Rick, 16 days. So you have 16 days to figure out how to get the pre for free.
Oh, yeah.
Good luck.
It's been
on
a while.
That.
Yeah, I didn't realize that.
Oh, did you send that one earlier?
I think that might have, it must have been earlier. So,
it just came in. But, give us a call, 241-8801, extension 1, or you can tweet to us at Help Me Rick or at Talking Digital. Real quick, because I'm a dog lover, I'm going to read this lost dog announcement one more time. This is for Connie. Her phone number is 260-9035. She has lost her 2-year-old black lab named Dormy, and he's wearing a red collar with some silver studs on the collar, and he was lost in the vicinity of 12th and Uray. So give her a call. Connie, 260-9035, if you find that black lab.
Hey, we got... We did have another call.
We had a call, and then they hung up.
Yeah, we gave...
Call us back, 241-8801, extension 1, or send us that tweet. Our website is helpmerick.com. We have all kinds of great tips and tech news all the time on that website.
Hello, you're on KFM Public Affairs with Rick and Adam answering all kinds of technical questions. What can we do for you?
I've got a question about AVG 8.5. Is it time to put that on the computer, or should we wait?
No, go ahead and put that on. Go ahead and put it on, but make sure that you still get the free version.
Yeah.
And the free version is kind of hidden. Every time they do an update like this, they make it a little bit tougher to find. But if you just go to free.avg.com.
Okay, free.
Yep, free.avg.com.
Oh, that'll get you right.
And they're going to give you two links. They're going to say, do you want the trial version or the free version? And it'll be worded something like, do you want the wonderful trial version or the inferior free version? You're just going to go for the inferior free version.
Oh.
Okay?
Okay.
And just keep clicking on that, and it works great.
And if you need help getting it installed, go to helpmerick.com and search for AVG, and I've got all the steps there and the link to download it, and the video there showing you exactly what to do.
Oh, okay. I thought it was too early or something.
No, the AVG does generally a pretty good job of putting out their updates, and they're generally pretty good. And 8.0 came out last May, so this was actually pretty quick for them to come out with a new version.
Yeah.
But it is running actually better than the 8.0 version. So I'd go ahead and do it.
Oh, okay. Could I ask another question?
Absolutely. Sure. This one will cost, but that's okay.
Adam, I think that if I understood you right, you made some comment about a digital SLR camera wasn't as good as a point-and-shoot.
Oh, no. I wouldn't have said that.
Oh, I was wondering, what were you saying?
Yeah, no, I wonder... I don't remember. I mean, I can't remember what I was saying, but I'm just guessing based on what you said that the reason I switched from an SLR to a point and shoot was for portability, not for quality of pictures. The quality of pictures is still better on an SLR by far because for various reasons. I mean, the size of the lens, the size of the sensor, all of that. The SLR still will give you superior pictures, but for portability and economics and all of that, I think maybe one of the other things I might have mentioned is that my Canon SX10IS that I just bought has the equivalent of a 540mm zoom lens that has distortion and things like that. It's not as nice as if I would have went out and bought a 540mm zoom lens for an SLR, but the fact is it fits in my pocket, or it fits in a small bag compared to what I would have to carry for an SLR to do that.
Pants.
Yeah.
I see. I thought you said something about on the SLR that you had to use your computer to adjust the pictures or something.
Oh, I know what we're talking about there. Yes. Yeah, what it is a lot of times the in-camera adjustments, when you get a point-and-shoot camera, it has all this pre-built software inside of it. And what it will do is it will saturate. And I think when I was mentioning that, I was probably talking to people who are like realtors or grandmothers, somebody who just takes a picture and just wants a good picture straight out of the camera. The software that's built into most digital cameras, most point and shoots, will sharpen it, brighten the colors, and adjust it according to what it thinks would be a nice looking picture. So it'll even adjust exposure and everything right in the camera without you thinking about it or doing anything to it. An SLR, by default, is usually set up to not do very much of that stuff because they assume you know more about the picture you're taking, and so they don't do a lot of the thinking for you. They don't go through and adjust the saturation and exposure and all of that to make a nice picture straight out of the camera. Sometimes you have to go into the software and adjust the contrast and things like that to make it look the way you want it to. But that's the nature of the beast. That's what they want you to do, and that's what most people want.
It's giving you the raw data.
Exactly.
I see. Yeah, I haven't bought a digital camera yet, and I was curious what you meant.
It's not necessarily a disadvantage. It's just something you need to be aware of, that when you get a digital SLR, the company is assuming that you know more about photography than if you get a point and shoot, so they don't do as much of the adjustments for you within the camera. A lot of times there's settings that you can adjust that will do those things, so you have to play with it a little bit, but it's not like when you buy a Kodak camera, you go get it, you take a picture outside of flamingos and they're a beautiful pink and everything is just right, and it, you know, the sky is beautiful blue and everything, because it, in the computer, it saturated the image and it made everything look the way that, you know,
in the camera,
that they think that that's the way that things should look. With an SLR, it doesn't do any of that for you unless you tell it to.
Okay. I see. So for the average person, then probably the point and shoot is the best deal then. Huh?
And it all depends on how you shoot, but yeah, I would think that.
I'd say if you're not a photographer.
Yeah. I think that far too many people buy SLRs because they look mean and they're, you know, they think of a fancy camera. They think they're going to be changing lenses a lot. They think they're going to be taking really nice pictures. You'll be able to get a pro quality picture out of any 10 megapixel camera, or even I would say 6 or 8 megapixel camera. You'll be able to get a pro quality picture. It's going to be, you know, different. It's going to rely less on your skills and more about the capability of the camera when you get a little point and shoot.
Well, I think the difference in point and shoot digitals today versus the old point and shoot film is, on a point and shoot film, you had no options. You took the picture and whatever you got at the developers is what you got. But even in the least expensive point and shoots digital, as you get more sophisticated with your knowledge, you can make some of those adjustments for your f-stop and your aperture and all that crazy stuff that I don't know a lot about. Even on a point and shoot digital, as you get more sophisticated, or just leave it on auto and let it take a great picture. So you have those options to make some of those adjustments, especially with the Canons and the Olympus and the Nikon. And it seems like less so with the Nikons lately, but
yeah.
But especially with the Olympus and the Canon, you can get as advanced as you want with a point and shoot, or leave it on auto. Either
right.
One.
Oh, is the Canon Rebel? Is that a point and shoot?
No, that's an SLR.
Yeah, that's an SLR.
That's their entry level SLR.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's a good camera. It's a beautiful camera. And, you know, I'm not necessarily discouraging anybody from an SLR.
But know why you want it.
Yeah, know why you want it. Because the main thing about an SLR is it is bulky. And it's something, if you're planning on carrying it with you all the time, that's why I switched. As I found, I wasn't taking my camera with me in so many places because I didn't want to carry the backpack and the camera bag and the extra lenses and, you know, all of that stuff. I just wanted a little camera I could carry with me.
And I think you hit on it earlier that if you plan on learning to do the f-stop and the aperture and the speed of the film and all that stuff, then an SLR is going to be okay for you. But I think Adam mentioned that a lot of people buy an SLR thinking they're going to do all that, but they leave it on auto and never switch the lens. So you really spent twice as much money as you needed to.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah. Well, what is a good point and shoot then? In your opinion?
You know, the one I use that I really, really like, and after reading a lot of reviews and trying a lot of different things, is the Canon SX10IS.
XX10.
It's S as in Sam.
Uh-huh.
X-ray.
Yep. 10. And then IS as in image stabilization.
Oh, okay. It has image stabilization.
Yeah, it has image stabilization and a 540mm zoom lens. It shoots beautiful movies. Has really cool face detection and autofocus stuff. It's really a good camera and loaded with more features than I ever really need. Another one to look at that's a little bit smaller camera is the Panasonic, and I can't remember the exact name of it. I want to say FM4 or FM5 or something like that.
What's the name of their... they call them the Panasonic...
you know what? I'm not sure.
Shoot, my brother has one of those. He likes it.
It is really a nice little camera. I thought about buying it because you really can. It has a 10 or 12x zoom, and you really can put that in your shirt pocket. It is a small camera, and it does take nice pictures, but not quite as versatile as the Canon. The Canon is almost as big as a small SLR.
Oh, and does it take good pictures of scenery?
Yeah.
The Panasonic Lumix, that's what they call it.
That's right.
L-U-M-I-X.
Yeah.
Oh, Lumix. All right, that's great. I sure appreciate that information.
Sure, that's what we're here for.
Thank you very
Thanks for
much.
Calling. Bye-bye.
Bye.
241-8801, extension 1 is the phone number. There's great questions.
Yeah,
and that's exactly the things we like to talk about.
It all depends on what you shoot and what kind of camera you're used to using. And that's really what the first digital camera you buy should be as close to the regular camera that you're used to using.
Currently.
currently. Mm-hmm. If you're not using a camera, get something pretty basic, even buy a Kodak. I mean, they're just to get your hands dirty and learn how to use it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, graduate.
And you can
from
get
there.
A decent digital camera for under $100.
Watch the clearance racks. You can get them for $50-$60. I bought my son a 10 megapixel Kodak for $40 right before Christmas.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm serious. I wish I would have bought a bunch more of them because they were on clearance.
Right.
After I bought it, I thought, I should have bought more. I went back.
Now, it's probably got like a 3X zoom.
Yeah, 3X zoom, but fantastic, better pictures than my Canon does if you're doing just one-to-one ratio shots. Like if I'm just taking a picture, if I'm not trying to zoom in or do macro or anything, just pulling off a shot, just because its saturation is perfect, its sharpening
Kodak
is perfect.
Kodak
just does a great job at that. But I can't adjust anything in the camera. It is just basically take a picture and that's what you get.
Right. But a lot of people, that's all they want.
Yeah.
That's
all
they want.
But nothing beats the movie quality that I've seen on the Canon.
The IS ones.
The Canon XSIS. I mean, the movies, we quit using our digital camera because the videos shoot so nice on that Canon.
That's very cool. That's very cool. Yeah, I ordered mine. I tell you, I ordered one.
Yeah, you did. Wait
so
till you
I'm
play
hoping
it.
It's coming
it
in.
It does so many funky little things that...
That you kind of like.
One thing that I really like about the Canon X10IS, there's several out there, but the thing I really like about it is the software in it. And I always never really cared much for things like face detection and things like that.
Right.
But it will actually, when I shoot up to 9 people in a group, it will go through and I can tell it to only snap the pictures if everybody's eyes are open, which is kind of interesting. But the really thing I really like about it is I can take a picture and then it does a little inset while I'm focusing on the person. Mm-hmm. It does a little inset and shows me the face.
There's a little box
of whoever. Yeah, it zooms in on their face and it actually shows a super... It superimposes the face over the picture.
Okay.
So I can see whether their eyes are open and whether they're smiling. And I can just, the arrow button will rotate through the different people in the picture.
To see if you need to take it again.
Yeah, to see if I need to take it again. Very or cool. Even while I'm taking the picture, if they're far away, you know, you can't tell on that little, even though it's a 3-inch or 2-inch or whatever LCD, you still can't tell whether their eyes are open because it's so small.
Right.
But it will do that little inset and zoom right in on the face so you can tell. Cool. It's really, really
now, cool. One thing I love the Canon for.
Yeah.
Because it's one of the few digital cameras. Well, I shouldn't say one of the few, but it's rare these days to find a digital camera with a...
Yeah, with a viewfinder.
With a viewfinder.
Right.
And to me, again, call me a traditionalist or call me old-fashioned, but... I think that you take better images holding that next to your face because I think you stabilize it a little bit better and you're able to frame it a little bit better.
Right.
Then so many people get a digital camera. They hold it out at arm's length to be able to see that screen.
Yeah.
And then their pictures are never quite sharp.
Yeah.
And it's because of just a little bit of movement.
Yeah. You know, on that same note, though, the Canon SX10IS and a few of their other ones, the LCD screen actually flips out and rotates.
And that's what I like about
it. And what you can do about it is hold it way above your head,
so
shoot
if you're
over
in
a
funky position.
Yeah, shoot way over a crowd or shoot
or around
down below,
a corner.
Around a corner, whatever. And you can actually see what you're looking at and take the picture, you know, because that LCD screen rotates. And it's just such a great design camera.
But when you don't need that, close it.
Yeah.
You're saving battery
time
and you use a viewfinder.
Absolutely.
Because you probably use the viewfinder for most shots, right?
Most of the time. I find myself using the LCD more often than I ever thought I would.
To even frame the shots, though?
Yeah, sometimes.
So you're doing it that way, too?
Yeah, only because I shoot above crowds.
Right, for those kinds of things.
I'm a people person. I shoot pictures of people. Mm-hmm. I don't shoot pictures very much of scenery and wildlife and all of that. So for me, the people part of it, you know, I'm shooting so many strange angles and over crowds or whatever that it does make a difference to me to be able to use that LCD, but not all the time.
Well, but like you said, it's a flexible LCD and that's what makes it even more useful is because you can rotate it to be where you want it to be. All right. So 241-8801 extension one, we have about 5 or 6 more minutes here on the Noontime Public Affairs Show here on 88.1 FM Grand Junction, Colorado. Give us a call, 241-8801 extension 1, and let us know what you like as far as digital camera.
Sure.
We talked about phones earlier today. We talked about laptops for graduates.
Yeah.
All kinds of good topics.
Merging
today.
The two topics, the pre-phone is going to have a flash on it.
Oh,
is that not cool?
LED flash.
3 megapixel with an LED flash. And if you buy it at Best Buy, you don't have to mail in the rebate. They just give you the $100 off right there.
Which is what they always do because Best Buy doesn't do rebates,
which
is cool. That's a good...
Anyway, I'll quit yakking about the pre.
Oh, that's okay.
Pentax.
I was trying to bait you yesterday and you weren't taking any of the bait.
Oh, yeah.
On Twitter.
That's because I'd already tweeted about it so many times that day, I guess. But Yeah, it looks like Pentax just announced another 14 megapixel camera.
SLR point and shoot.
SLR. The thing about Pentax is their point and shoots are really inexpensive, but very, very good for what
good
you
quality.
Get. So, yeah. All right, let's move on. We got another call. Hi, welcome to KFM Public Affairs with Rick and Adam. What can we do for you?
I've been trying to...
What's your name, sir?
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's Daryl.
Hi,
hey, Daryl.
I've been trying to connect or get file and print sharing between my laptop and my desktop.
Ah, okay.
And,
good question.
I haven't had much success. I wonder if you could give me an idea about how to get started.
Do you have Windows XP, Windows Vista?
XP, yeah.
And XP's on both of them?
Yeah.
And what kind of internet connection do you have in the house?
I have Bresnan, and the laptop connects through a router.
Okay, perfect. So you got everything in place there. I would say the easiest way for you to get started, have you tried using the file and or the network wizard, the network setup wizard on both computers?
I have.
And you've set up. Now, the most important thing that a lot of people sometimes will miss is when you're going through the wizard that you do set up that they're both on the same work group. Have you done that?
I don't think so.
Because when you go through the setup wizard, there's going to be a point in there where it's going to ask you for a work group name. And the default, I think, is usually either MS Home or it'll say work group.
Okay.
But when you run it on both sides, make sure that you name the work group the same thing on both sides.
Okay.
Not the computer name. They'll ask you that too. And those have to be different. The computer name has to be different. The work group name has to be the same.
Okay.
Once you get through the wizard, that only gets the kind of things talking with each other. To actually share the files, what you do is go into your My Computer on either computer, and then you right-click on whatever folder that you want to share. So the My Documents or My Pictures or whatever you want to share, you right-click on it.
Okay.
Then you click Sharing.
Okay.
And after you click Sharing, it's going to say, this folder is not shared. Do you want to share it? And then you just click Yes. And then click OK, and then you'll be on your road to sharing the files.
Okay, and then printers work the same way?
Printers, once you get this whole wizard stuff settled, you go into the control panel, go to your printers, right-click on the printer that you want to share, and then again click sharing.
Yeah, is this Windows XP or Windows Vista?
XP on both sides.
XP on both sides. Actually, when you go through that printer, since you have, if you have Service Pack 2 or Service Pack 3 on, which is the newest updates on Windows.
I think I have it.
Okay, when you go through that network setup wizard, it's actually going to ask you if you want to turn file and printer sharing on.
Yep.
And when you do that, it will automatically share your printers.
Does it automatically?
Yeah, it does now with Service Pack 2, and I think Service Pack 2 started it, and Service Pack 3 definitely does that.
And then you can verify that by looking if there's a hand under the printer or under the folder you want to share. That means it's shared.
Sounds good.
All right.
Thanks very much.
All right. Good luck.
Talk to you later.
Bye-bye. Networking is always kind of a tough thing.
Yeah. Networking is, once you get it working,
it's beautiful.
No problems. But yeah, setting it up, describing how to set it up in a 40-second phone call or a minute and a half phone call, it's not going to happen.
Well, especially if you get just one little thing wrong,
yeah,
you're going to have some problems.
And sometimes you'll get everything set up perfect and it looks like it's not going to work. 2 days later, it starts working out of the blue. So
right. It's
just a weird thing. Networking is a strange thing.
We better wrap it up.
Okay.
Do you want to get us out of here some music? You've been listening to Rick and Adam on the Noontime Public Affairs. Our website is helpmerick.com. And we'll be back again next month on the third Wednesday of the month. Thanks for your calls and thanks for listening.